It's now time to think outside the box of what we've always known.
I myself will tend my sheep and have them lie down, declares the sovereign Lord.
I think that's a profound turning point in somebody's relationship with God.
And our hope in starting this was that this would become an ever-expanding conversation.
Just two real guys talking about life. That's a nice tagline.
I'm Wayne Jacobson.
And I'm Brad Cummings.
And welcome to another edition of The God Journey. Well, I'm in Raleigh, North Carolina.
No, you're not. You're going to be.
When I turn this on, I will be.
You're doing that time-dimensional coupling thing.
People like when I'm on the East Coast because the podcast load earlier. I'm up earlier in the morning as long as I've got Wi-Fi where I'm at. But since I'm the one who's got to click it on, I got no people to turn it on for me.
That's good.
So I have to turn it on.
I don't know how any of that works.
I punch one button, but I have to get online to do it. So there you go.
It'll very good. Well, how's Raleigh doing?
I just got here.
Prophetically, let us know.
I just got here. I'm going to play golf this morning, I think, and then we're going to meet with a counseling group tonight and tomorrow. They use He Loves Me to do a lot of counseling stuff, and they want to ask questions like, I don't like what you said here, so that'll be fun.
Oh, really?
Yeah, get some of that. I like that.
What do you mean they don't like what you said here?
Well, they have questions about, like, I'm not sure, and usually it's, I don't know what it is because I'm not there yet, but it could be like accountability, because some people are big on accountability.
You know one of the mind benders in He Loves Me? Is when you suggest the whole idea that, God is in Christ reconciling the world. So when you put the Father and the Son there as opposed to that, oh, my God, why have you forsaken me? That throws so many people for a loop.
Yeah, it does.
Because they don't see God as being present in that stuff.
So if you haven't figured it out, we're recording this a bit early.
Okay, I guess we won't talk about that.
Oh, I didn't.
No, it's fine.
We get back on. No. I thought you were.
Go with it, brother.
I thought you made your point. In a
I did.
Marvelous
I did.
Wonderful
thank
way.
You. It's a
there was nothing else to add to it, so I have moved on. If you need me to talk about it with you and affirm you in some way, I'm happy to do that.
Let's go.
Okay. Well, I would just. This big court case before the Supreme Court this week about the protests at the military funerals by the
those
weird wackos out of Kansas
singing Crazy Train as people go to
Crazy Train.
Yeah, a couple of ladies singing Ozzy Osbourne's song is inviting people to go to hell, and you're on your Crazy Train. You're just going like, ladies.
Oh, this is that Phelps bad crowd, singers. The God hates fags bunch, and now God hates America bunch, and they. They celebrate at military funerals because God's killing our soldiers.
Yep, this is that same people.
Yeah, I don't know about the Crazy Train, but I think these people are on a Crazy Train. And so now the Supreme Court's got to decide, is it free speech to mock a funeral? Or is a funeral a public event or a private event?
I would say private, and I would say that that's completely wrong and stupid. I got to tell you, I think we've lost our brains.
There's two ways, just like we did the mosque thing a while back or the community center in Manhattan. There's two ways to look at this. One, if it is a right to do it, you're a moron for doing it.
Yeah. It might be a right, but you are wrong.
And I didn't mean to apply that to Muslims. I mean to apply that to people in Kansas. Let me be clear.
Oh, I didn't skip a beat when you did what you did.
Their idea really is God is so disgusted with America that he's killing our young men overseas in war, and we need to celebrate that.
Yeah, and he's just getting started.
Till enough men die that we repent and what? Shoot homosexuals? I mean, what's the other side of that? Seriously. What do these people want to do? Drive them in the closet? Drive them in the ocean? It's unbelievable to me. That people who claim to know God don't have a clue about the nature of our God and are willing to go into a private moment of grief and use it for your own publicity. I hope the Supreme Court gets this one right. I mean, I'm not much for restricting free speech at all, but you can't scream fire in a theater, and I don't think you can mock a parent burying their child who died in military service in this country. I just don't think you can be allowed to do it. And I hope they pay severely. I don't know how the lower courts got that wrong. And they actually made the guy...
Well, because they probably did in San Francisco.
No, this is clear back east somewhere. This is not just our Ninth Circuit, which is a bit loony.
You know what? The court seemed less and less about truth and reality and more about people's punditry and personality.
Well, to make freedom of speech absolute is absurd. I do agree that freedom of speech does not mean I don't get to be offended. People can say offensive things, but they don't have to say it in offensive places. You want to make this case on a mall, at an airport, you want to make it in a public place, fine. I don't think a funeral or down the street from a funeral is a way to do that.
I just wonder, without the media...
And it offends me deeply.
Yeah, without the media, would things like that ever happen? Because it seems as if in the foment of, oh, this is, you know, you give voice to a bunch of crazy people that don't know God. And wow, we'd make an issue out of it.
But claim to. That's the problem.
See, but one verse out of their mouth and you're going like, I don't know who or what they're talking about.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think most of the world,
I'll guarantee you atheists know more about God than that bunch.
Yeah, and the fact that they're defaming God, most people just rolling their eyes going, nah, yeah. These guys are an aberration. These guys are whack.
Nutbags.
These guys are not much different than the Islamic terrorists are. Not much different.
No.
So,
just ruder.
Anyway, how many gods does America have? This is a quiz.
How many gods?
How many gods does America have?
Money.
Nope, you're on the wrong pathway. Try that over again. How many gods does America celebrate?
The pantheon.
There's a, well, could,
that would be my answer.
Well, there's
a plethora.
There's a new book out.
Oh.
It says America.
There's a new book out.
Has four gods.
Oh. What four gods are these? We talked about an article similar to this
a while back. The book is called America's Four Gods by Paul Froese and Christopher Bader.
Okay.
It's
thanks, guys. What are our four gods?
It's interesting. I haven't read the book, so I'm not recommending the book. I'm reading an article about it in USA Today, so this is the easy way for me
you
to read
You got the digest version.
But some people may want to read the book. It's God Views and Issues. 9 out of 10 Americans believe in God. This is a survey of 1,648 U.S. adults conducted in 2008. And they've concluded there's four gods that 9 out of 10 Americans say they worship God. But the God they worship is very, very different. There's four gods, four views of God that define our culture.
So four views of God.
Yeah. You want to hear them?
Yeah.
First one is the authoritative God.
Yeah. I bet you that's got the most.
The one engaged in history and meting out harsh punishments to those who do not follow him.
Yep.
28% of the nation believe in that God.
Only 28?
28%. It's interesting as you watch it. They're all in the 20s somewhere. It's interesting. It's about a quarter of the population. There's variances.
Take the harsh authoritarian.
Yeah. And
okay.
Then there's the benevolent God. The God who's engaged in the world and loves and supports us in caring for others.
See, I don't think a lot of people worship that God. I think a lot of people want to worship that God.
No, I agree with you there. The God we want to worship and the God we probably do is very different.
Yeah, because I think hilarious. Most people live with that authoritarian while they proclaim their belief and hope for
nice
guy.
In your omnipotent wisdom about the variances of American theology, how many 20% say they have the view of the authoritarian God. How many do you think actually follow that God?
I don't think they follow God at all.
Okay, then what were you saying? He's had to be a lot more. So more what? More people believe it than say they believe it?
No, I think most people's understanding of God. Oh, no. I get that. I get your question. I get it.
Good.
I think most people have that view of God as the authoritarian that if they step out of line, they will be in trouble with. And I think that is the predominant understanding, view, lens through which people interpret God.
Of the religious God. Of people who are committed to religion.
I would say that's got to be 70, 80, even higher than that.
Yeah, but there's only like 32% of people still are conservative religious, you know, go to church every week. And I mean, so that's
all. But I don't even think it's about people that go to church. I think you get your guy on the street who wouldn't even necessarily declare himself, yes, I am a believer and have any sense of what that is. I still think most people's concept of God is the ultimate authority with whom I could be in trouble, who will be the evaluator of my behavior.
But there are 22% who believe in the malevolent God, and what you're saying is probably most people hope he is.
I think most people hope he's that while they're still affected more by that other view.
Our email.
That's just my thought.
Well, our email people were struggling with the transition from religion to relationship. They're definitely caught between those
two. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, good cop, bad cop.
Then there's the critical God.
That's different than the authoritarian. Go,
yeah, the critical
explain.
God.
Explain.
They define this God. The poor, the suffering, and the exploited in this world often believe in a critical God who keeps an eye on this world but delivers justice in the next. I don't know why that's the critical God, but 21% of people hold that view. Mostly the poor or working class people who feel like, I'm not getting what I deserve in this life, but I'll get it in the next, and you're going to get yours, you rich old creep. That's how.
It's class warfare. That's nothing to do with God.
Yeah, but they exploit that every election rolling around.
Yeah, they do.
Be all over that one.
That would be the Democratic one.
And then there's the distant. Then there's the distant God.
That'd be the Republican one.
Not in their minds, but certainly in their actions. 24% see a distant God that booted up the universe and then left.
Yeah,
left
a la Bette Midler.
Left humanity. Bette Midler?
Yeah.
Where do you come up with that?
She's God way up there looking down.
He booted it up, left it to its own, and if you want to whack on people, you just get to get away with it because God's not that involved. Interesting.
So you have a distant, uninvolved God. You have a God who will balance the scales in the hereafter.
Yep.
But is, what they say the critical God is, he cares about the poor or...
He cares about the poor, but he's not balancing accounts till the end
of the hereafter.
So you just kind of gut it through here.
And then you got the lovey-dovey God.
The benevolent God.
And then you got the authoritative, you're going to be in trouble God.
Yeah.
See, three out of the four.
Yeah.
Are nothing to do with the God I know.
Yeah. So you're the third one. Or the fourth one. the one out of the four.
I would at least lean towards the lovey-dovey guy.
Yeah, but that doesn't do it either, does it?
No, it doesn't, because they don't have an involved one, and they don't have that balance. I just...
See, this is what I hate about research. You defined your four deals.
Yeah, I'd want to talk to the 1,628 people that they're talking about to really find out if they fit these four constructs or those were just the ones that they lumped them in, because I don't think most people have it defined as God is this... But not that. I think most people live in that good cop, bad cop,
yeah.
Get you.
Here's what's wrong with research. We're going to define four ways you can view God. And then we're going to design a bunch of questions to kind of pin you into one of those four things. Then we're going to give you those. Nobody chooses one of those four gods. But they get questions like, do you think God squares accounts in the afterlife or does he fix things here on the planet? Eh, I think he's an afterlife guy. And then you just go through all that. And then they classify you as to one of those four things. And I don't know that anybody would say, yes, I believe in that God uncritically. I don't have, I think that's.
I agree with you. So I don't get what's their deal.
But people,
why'd they write the book?
But people who want to process this more, PBS is running a 3-part series, starts this Monday, which is last Monday, so set your VCR in the past, if you could.
Well, that would be great.
You missed that. But the next two on Monday is going to be
rerun.
God in America, if you want to kind of explore this. I think what fascinated me is that this whole thing is still God in a box. It's still...
This is God according to my image.
And, you know, I hear that fight sometimes. I hear people even on our website and even email to me, this fight between the authoritarian God or the mamby-pamby, warmy-fuzzy God.
Which is neither.
Well, yeah, which is so weak.
See, I think when people get all – they're caught in theoretical land as opposed to dealing with the God who is.
God is a principle.
They're dealing with God as a construct, as an idea, concept. And it's like, you know what? He's an actual person. And all the people I know don't ever get buttonholed as just one without an element of the other. I think all of this is on a spectrum of reality that says, you know what? God is love. And yet God also cares about truth and justice. And those are balanced perfectly in him with clarity of omniscience. In us, we don't get that right.
Yeah, and even trying to buttonhole him into one of these four categories, I think we do the same thing to people. Well, you know, when people ask me, you know, what's...
Well, yeah, the researchers just did.
What's Sarah like? And you go, well, gee, I don't know that I can give you five descriptors of a person. She's an ADPJ, you know, or whatever the whole study was that classified.
That explains it all. I get it. Now I'll relate to her as an EFP.
Or people ask me, you know, are you an extrovert or introvert? It depends on where you meet me. I think if I'm on the road and I'm doing things to help people,
extrovert.
You're going to say extrovert.
Extrovert.
But there are
here,
times I am home.
Yeah, homebody, introvert.
I get in my car I'm writing down mileage, and I realize I haven't been in this car since the last time I drove back from an airport. And I'm driving back to one. I haven't left the house. I've been here enjoying life, my kids, my grandkids, people who come by and visit. I just, if I've gone out, I've gone out with Sarah in Sarah's car. So to pigeonhole somebody is to dehumanizing. I don't know how you dehumanize God, but we talked about deifying God. You put him in a box, and none of those boxes were. I was trying to think, what's the God I believe in that would
see? No. I think that's a whole different deal than this, because I don't know that people believe in any of those gods.
Oh, by percentages, we have it down.
I would love to know what they mean by believe in, because if it means I'm going to live my life as if this were true. I don't know that any of that's consistent, because I don't see those people living in our culture consistently.
In general, are there people who live in the fear of an authoritative God? Yeah, there are. Are there people who live in the hope of a benevolent God, that I'm just living like whatever I want, and I'm hoping in the end God's just going to be a good guy and let me in? I think there are people who do that. I don't think it's totally off the mark, but I am not comfortable with any of these descriptions. We talked, Phil, about where is the God
who is?
Where's the Abba Father? I guess that's what I'd...
Where's God as Father? Where's God as friend? Where's God as involved in the details of my life?
And what I love about Abba Father is, yeah, tender, compassionate, gracious, even to people who deserve to be whacked. That describes God. But as you said, you know, also in God travels light. You don't separate God's love from God's light. And God's light engages us in our brokenness. It engages injustice in the world.
Confronts it and overcomes it.
It calls us to go into the world as lovers, not just of God and of truth, but of light and of, you know, it's there's such a more full dynamic to who God is. That's why when you reduce God to a principle, the letter we read last week, well, I read the scripture and think, well, is God this way? And I read the scripture, is God that way?
You could add God is knowable as a category, and God is all holy other.
Noble cancels out the distant God.
Yeah, but there's
and the benevolent God and the authoritative God.
There's also really religious people that would profess to know God a lot, but they consider him more as the holy other. And so there is a gulf between us and him that even the man Christ Jesus is not a bridge that we can cross over. And it's like, I mean, they so deify God that it's almost like, well, then what are you relating to? You got a concept again. You don't have a person that we can know.
Yeah.
You know what's so crazy? When I was over in Israel, I was talking to one of these rabbis.
He wasn't crazy, was he?
Maybe. I don't know.
Oh, you think the crazy thing? I was talking to this rabbi.
Crazy thing was I was over there.
Yeah, that was crazy. Yeah.
And then I'm talking to one of these rabbis. And I was trying to get to a place where it's like, can we have a real conversation in terms of who is it that you worship?
He almost blew me away with that.
Yeah. Who is it?
A lot of wind came over here.
Sorry.
Okay.
In terms of, is God knowable? And when I would talk about God as a person, it's like I would get that dog whistle frequency going, like that was a catchphrase that, no, God is not like that. And I was going like, golly, I don't understand. Why is that such a trigger that would get you to pull back like I'm doing some weird doctrinal mantra on you? And it's like, no, God is not a person. Like you and I are people, but yes, God can be known. I'm going like, well, okay, that's interesting. What is it that you're relating to? Who is it that you're relating to? And he had more concepts and quotes of other people who were scholars, as opposed to intimate, firsthand, I know him for myself. that was like, what are you talking about? He found it attractive.
Yep.
But he didn't have any knowledge of it.
It would be like four people in a room, three of which have read and heard everything I have written and spoken and posted on the internet. And one person who hasn't read anything but spent a weekend with me. Now, get those people in a room together, and I guarantee you the three who've never met me are going to be absolutely certain about the kind of person I am from whatever bias they took. I mean, I read websites that say I'm emergent author, and I just think it's hilarious because I'm not in that conversation. I don't take on the term emergent, but people use it to be dismissive of me or authors I have quoted or whatever. And it's funny that people can seem so certain about who you are who have never met you. And I've heard people say, well, Wayne believes this. And I'll go, no, I don't.
Wayne does not. Wayne.
I can actually understand how you read something I wrote through your lens and concluded I must be that way. I can get that track.
See, but those glasses for most people are so thick that I'm not sure that what they're interpreting, that defines more them than it does the sources they try to pull from.
Yeah. Plus, when they're reading you, they're putting you a box of all other people they've read, and they come out with conclusions. Well, you must be one of those arrogant author, distant people type. And then people are always shocked when I'm sitting in their home, making fun of their kids, playing games at the table, goofing around. And they're like, see, I never thought you would be this way. What? I am this way. I goof around with my kids. I goof around with my grandkids. I goof around with lots of people's kids.
What?
Yeah, I was in a, I'm not doing the peeps thing again. I still am quivering inside from using the word in public. But, I was in a squirt gun fight with some kids in Arizona. They brought some squirt guns into the room, and doggone, they need to be filled up. And, you know, Sarah was going, you did what? Yeah, I know. I lost it for a minute, but... And it's just if people know you, and I think the great gulf, and I get this email, we get on the blogs all the time, people, I want to know him. I don't know how to know him. I ask him to make himself known to me. I'm not getting it. I want to see God in the personality that he, in this full orbed of which you and I are only going to get a slice of it anyway. We talk about God being a full orbed personality. He's more faceted than we can pick up on. But he is knowable in the sense that I see the blending of compassion and justice. I see his passion for love and truth in the same mix. But people who don't know that, and they feel like, and there's a lot of people who listen to this podcast in hopes that someday they hear us and they go, I hear you. I want that.
Really?
Yeah, but it hasn't clicked for me.
I'm looking at you going like, I don't get that at all.
And
it's like, I held my peace for a moment. But I look at, it's pretty hard in my mind. I'm just looking out the window and saying, wow, that tells me about something about the God who is. I really do have a hard time looking at the world that is. And not catching glimpses of, wow. Taylor and I were driving the other day to her soccer practice, looking out the back window, and the sky is on fire.
You're driving looking out the back window?
Yeah, I got the rearview mirror, you know.
Okay, good. I hope so.
And, yeah, I'm pretty good, you know. Can do it blindfold with a burger.
We're driving backwards down the street so we can see the sunset. Yeah.
But the sky is on fire.
Oh, we saw one the other night.
Yeah. And you're looking at that. And my first impulse was, wow, God.
But that's because you know him, isn't it? If you didn't know him, if you were a total atheist, didn't believe in God, you could look at that and go, gosh, what a lovely.
Not that sky. Not that night. I mean, serious.
But you don't know because you already have a connection.
No. See, the point I'm trying to make is in that moment, There is an invitation to look at that and say, is there handiwork I can see and know? We have some beautiful art in our house. And we had a friend that came over and all of a sudden he just went, oh, saw one of these and just went, wow.
The Mona Lisa?
No.
Yeah. What, Van Gogh? What do you got in your house, for Pete's sake?
It's a picture.
I've been in your house. I haven't been awed by your art.
I don't think you've been in that room.
There's an art room?
No. Yeah, it's that large. We have a museum.
You have the Statue of David, don't you?
No. I don't know why you're going there.
Stop.
Yeah, okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
You're in a t-shirt. What do you know about art?
There's a lot about me, brother. Multifaceted, big orb.
Big orb.
Yeah, I'm big orb.
Okay.
The reality is, you look at something that someone has created, you can know something about them. I look at the world around us, and I look at the beauty of nature, and you just end up going like, excuse me, I really have a hard time thinking this is some cosmic accident. I'm sure some people do, but I find that mystifying. And so when I go like, golly, the attention to detail, the design, the care, I can start to extrapolate and know some inklings. Who is this that created that? The extravagance of a sunset. I end up going, is breathtaking.
I'm not disagreeing with you, but I don't know how we look at that outside of the fact that we already know him or we're exposed to him at
AI. I think it's a starting point. It's like a trailhead. It's like, you know what?
It can be. I agree
Walk
with you.
Down
I'm not
a little bit. If someone's stuck saying, well, I'm praying for it, but I just don't know.
Okay, make fun of these people. I love some of these people who are stuck.
I'm going to say I love them too.
You lie.
No, but I do think that there's a little bit of a victim there that's saying, no. Oh, I don't know.
No, I think it's, I hope it's bigger than that. I hope it's not just that. I think people can look at the sunset, look at the stars, or wander around the fall colors in Duluth and totally miss the God behind it.
Yes, they can.
Right. And I think people can stand in it going, oh, I want to see this God. I don't see him. It's not because he isn't there. I think it's because they're looking through the wrong glasses, or they're looking in the wrong places, or they've got expectations that are skewed.
I want to help them
through that rather than just say, if you can look at that sunset and if it's a trailhead, yeah, go down that trailhead. I'm all for that. But I have talked to enough people to know that isn't enough. Where do I
stop for just a second?
I'm not done with my question yet.
Okay.
Why would I stop in the middle of my question?
Because I haven't thought.
You have a better question, or are you?
No, I want to look at what you're looking at in that moment when someone says, "There's the sunset," all that stuff. I'll guarantee you, 9 out of 10, they're dealing with something that happened that's disappointed them, frustrated them, that they thought some other outcome would have evidenced God's presence, and they haven't resolved that. And I think that most people that in that question to desire to say, I want to know God, but it's just not working.
9 out of 10, you say. Have you done the 16 and 48 people study to know that 9 out of 10 is accurate?
20 years of living, loving, and pastoring people.
Anecdotal people caught up in religion who live offended at God. That's mostly who you hang out with. Now, come on. Not totally, but mostly. Me too. I'm not jessing on you. I think it's possible for people, might even say, gosh, that's a beautiful sunset and a beautiful God. But wake up in the morning going, God, I want to see you in my day. I want to catch your heartbeat for this jerk in my life or this, and are still at a loss to know how to do that. And I think largely, I'm not discounting.
See, I take the sunsets personally.
I grant you, I do too. I take the evening stars personally.
I take that as God in my life.
I get that, but other people may even get a glimpse there. Romans 1 talks about the splendor of God is displayed in the creation. So I get that, but I have a heart for people, some of which I agree is true. I have got a hurt. God didn't come through for me at a time I thought he should have, and I'm upset, and I don't know how to get past that.
Therefore, God can't be good.
I get that. I know that. But I think there's also other people that are just so tied up in their intellectual expectations of what it means for God to put his fingerprint on our life. They're looking for a voice to come out of the wall. They're looking for a neon sign to light up in their day. And I think God's loving us and engaging us is so much more subtle than that, that when you're looking for an exclamation point, a 2x4 to slap you across the head, you're going to wander around saying, oh, God never talks to me. I think God does. I think he communicates with every one of us. I think the subtleties get missed. And somebody's asking me today, why wouldn't God just, speak audibly to all of us. It would make it so easy. And I found myself answering it this way. I love the fact that God's in the more subtle moments because it draws you into a relationship. If he's not in the more subtle, if God were obtuse and God were just in your face every day with stuff, I would become more of an automaton of doing whatever that says. But when I have to draw to the quiet, when I need to go for a walk in the backyard, when I need to go walk through the trees in Duluth, when I need to stand in the evening in front of the stars and quiet my heart and listen to what impression is in the depth of my being, way down the layers of all the noise of the culture we live in, iPods, TVs, the newspapers, the constant input, get beneath the rantings of my own selfish soul that wants this and that and scream. And I've got to keep coming down through all of that into this tender, quiet place where God makes himself known to me. And I think God can make himself to me known in the clamor as well. But I'm thinking what deepens my relationship with him is that coming to the quiet and finding him there to make himself known.
Yeah, one of the things that I would often talk with people as far as that whole sense of how does this thing become relationship? And it's just, it's language I used. And I don't know if it's helpful. It was for me and it has been for others. I think a lot of people don't live fully present as if, you know, like if you were to think of your eyeballs in geography, like I'm right there. I think a lot of people live a few inches back. They're hiding a little bit behind some veneer, some protective, whatever, but they're not like fully there. And I think that when, because I think I'm afraid of what happens there. I don't feel protected. I think you can feel it on your face, honestly. I mean, I think there's moments of life where all of a sudden you just feel like, oh my gosh, I'm naked. I'm exposed. Help.
Which is the video podcast.
You can see my face.
Yeah,
okay,
it's all buggy. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. No, but I mean, I think all of us have experienced moments of that where you're just like, I'm not prepared for the exposure that this feels.
I'm thinking of Men in Black where that little guy is inside that guy's cranium and the face opens up.
Wow.
That's where I went.
Wow.
I'm a few inches back from my eyeballs.
Yeah, I don't know everyone. I only know anecdotally a few people that I pastored. The reality is I think that we can live there or we can live where we try to protect ourselves in some way, shape, or form. And I'll be honest, I can't hear several inches back very well. But I can hear very well when I'll live in that vulnerable place. You're laughing. I don't know what you're laughing at. You're looking at my face. The reality is...
No, I get what you're saying. I think about a person listening to this going, and taking what you're saying as a principle. I'm going to have to live a few inches forward.
I don't know how to do it. It's the capacity of being honest to God. I know what it is to pray, you know, closed-eyed religious sermons. And I also know what it is to actually talk to God as though he was there. Yeah. You know, when it says, you know, if anyone in the think he's going to get something from you, you got to believe that he is, and you got to know that he's a rewarder of those that diligently seek him. Yeah. Well, I go like, most of us don't do either of those.
Believe that he is?
We're struggling.
Or diligently seek him.
I think we're struggling in both of those categories. I don't think we boldly come before him and say, all right, God, let's talk. And I'm being absolutely honest. I think most of us don't know how to be absolutely honest. I think we're afraid of what would come back.
I think you're right. I mean,
And so I think in that whole domain, when we try to go like, you know, well, God didn't talk to me. It's like, you know what? How much of life have you just waited in that vulnerable, anxious place that none of us wants to just sit there?
And some are going to scream, hours. I've sat hours in there. I mean, I hear this all the time.
I know. I rarely believe that's true.
Ooh, see, now that's going to make it hard for you to help those people.
I don't know. Not if I sit with them.
Because I do think the thing that you said earlier about our disappointments at God not doing something we thought he should do. And now you're talking about something that I think is also true. And that is we have, because of living in a fallen world as insecure, fearful people, we've created coping mechanisms to kind of handle life at a distance. That's that few inches back that you're talking about. I think that's true. And I think all those coping mechanisms not only protect us from other people, They also provide a wall to God. I think that's what you're also saying. How do we step through that wall? How do we, and I think part of the way God loves us and part of him making himself known to us is he's got to strip down these coping mechanisms that we've used to keep ourselves protected, that we think protected in the culture, but it's not protected. It's living in darkness. Ultimately, what you're doing is you're, Romans 1 again, the truth of God is seen in the creation, but men don't see it because they suppress the truth and unrighteousness. I think that's great language. I am so afraid of how I've been hurt and what people are going to do to me, and maybe what the authoritarian God might do to me, or what the distant God might do to disappoint me.
Toss up my accusation about, I don't know if he's good.
That I'm not coming out enough to find out. And I don't have the strength of character to come out and find out. And I think that's part of what we do in loving other people is to help them. That's what I think I do with people who have a difficult time on this journey. If I can spend some time with them and dismantle some of their fears about being loved, then I open them to the possibility that next time they see a sunset, they're going to see God's fingerprints all over it.
Yeah, one of the things I would talk about is our fear of and craving for intimacy and how the reality is there's no way to have intimacy without vulnerability.
Yep.
And when you look at the word vulnerable, I was floored to learn this at one point, that the word vulnerable means able to be wounded. Well, who wants that? Excuse me? I'm going to live in a way that you could wound me? That's what it means to be vulnerable? No, thank you.
Well, Jesus sort of did.
But without vulnerability, you don't get intimacy. And I think so many people are like, I want intimacy. But you want it on your terms. You want it in a way you're all controlled for it.
You seem all upset about that.
Well, I get a little irritated.
I see that. But I think that scares people who are struggling with this very thing. So, it makes them run.
So,
why is Brad that mad at me? I'm just trying.
I'm not mad at people. I guess what I would oftentimes do, and this is people that I've walked with and loved, and I would think I've got a track record in their life to kind of say, excuse me, I think I can say this now. And so doing this on a podcast in an impersonal way and tossing out principles, I don't know that that's necessarily kind. But for people that want to endlessly be in that place, well, you know, I've done all that and God doesn't, I just go like, excuse me, I know God. God is not absent from that moment. God cares more about that than you. I'll guarantee you there's something that you're not potentially being honest about in terms of that there's an offense there.
Right. And coming at them with that much frustration, do you think that's going to encourage them inner or outer?
That's why I would say, you know what, probably the best thing is to sit with you.
Yeah,
for a while.
Yeah, but I'm just.
So I'm not trying to back people off now, but I don't accept the premise. No, I've really sought God and he's not there.
No, I don't. I don't either, but I love people who feel trapped there right now. And I think you invite them out the way Jesus invited people out of their diseased coping mechanisms, not get so frustrated you finally go, well, I'm sorry, you're wrong.
That's not what I'm saying, though. But Jesus also, you know, to the rich man, you know, go sell everything. He knew he zeroed into the one element where the guy said, "I've done everything," and he oh, really okay.
Yeah, but he didn't really mean it.
We were there. We know the tone of voice. I'll bet you that little rich young ruler guy was being honest in what he thought in his presentation.
I'm sure he was.
I've done everything.
Right, I'm sure
he
was.
And Jesus said, okay, great. Well, then now do this.
Yeah, that you couldn't do. And he couldn't do the other stuff either. So I don't think he was asking him to really do something he could do. I think he's trying to help him recognize that you can't do this.
He was poking his finger at the fact that maybe that idea that I've done everything isn't true. And maybe there's a starting point.
I agree.
That
that's true.
Is a place called humility. It says, you know what? I care about broken people. Don't paint me as though
I'm not trying to paint you that way. I'm just hearing this the way I think some of the people I talked to last week would hear it. And instead,
my apologies.
I'm just saying, instead of inviting them out, it's gonna. I get frustrated too with people that seem to. It's different if people telling me I haven't found him, so he's not real. Now I don't have much time for that. But when people are saying, I want to know him the way you know him, and I don't know why he's not making himself known to me like that, the conversation for me always shifts to, no, I'm sure he is. It's you're not seeing him. And why are you not seeing him? And what can we do to help open your eyes to see this God who wants to make himself known to you? Because I'm with you. He is knowable.
Not statistical, but more often than not, there's a hurt, there's a pain, there's a missed expectation, there's a disappointment. There's something that happened that led to the conclusion that God isn't with me and for me. He wasn't there.
Or you're just tied up in too much intellect about how this happens. I think that's another possibility.
And so typically, out of love and care, I'm not whacking them.
I know you're not. I'm just saying.
But I am trying to say, you know what? I do think that our beginning premises that we start down matter. If I'm going to sit there and say, well, I don't know. I'm going to let my circumstances be a judge of who God really is. I'm going to say, wow, I don't really know how that math works.
Right. Most people aren't consciously doing that, though. I don't think they're conscious.
But I think most people are doing that. They may not be conscious of it.
Yeah, and I'm all for loving them out of it, not just getting frustrated at it.
Thank you for traveling with us on the God Journey. You can be part of the conversation by visiting our website, thegodjourney.com.